we're back for another segment of The Grassy Knoll. On February 9th, 2007, we have with us for the monthly visit Bob Chapman. And he's a busy guy today, and he sounds like he's loaded for bear. So, Bob, thanks for coming back.
Should I just say I'm glad to be here and make a bear noise?
Yeah.
I don't even know what a bear noise sounds like.
Oh, it isn't a bear. What? It's bear, loaded for bear, not beer. However, that's a good idea, too. Oh, all right. We got a lot of stuff happening, but first, I got to tell you, Bob. You've lived in Florida. You've experienced the most dreaded species out there, called the snowbirds. Those are the people that come down and overrun our community from April through October. And those are the months that I try never to go shopping anywhere. I'll buy like 10 months worth of toilet paper and paper towels and never show myself in the mall until they're gone. They also drive 10 miles too slow, don't believe in directionals, and when you're out there with them, it's like being on a combat mission. So anyway, let me get to the chase. This is the stupidity that you see in these people. I get behind this woman. She buys about $20 worth of junk food. I mean, cheese nips, you know, all that good stuff that turns blood into sludge. Now, get this. All this junk food goes through, $20 worth. She buys 2 pears, 1 plum, okay? Not 3 pears and 2 pears and 1 plum, and a bunch of bananas. She finds out that the bananas are, in fact, not on sale. That was going to happen today. So the woman has rung her up, the cashier. Everything's ready to go, and now she doesn't want the bananas, and I flipped. And I'm like, what is the problem? You buy $20 worth of junk food, which is going to kill you. The one good thing you got there is the bananas and the fruit. And you don't want the bananas. Now, let me get this straight now. Are you eating bananas because, or are you buying them because you want to eat them and it's nutrient dense? Or are you buying them just because the freaking things are on sale? And I looked at her. I said, what are you thinking about? If you want the bananas, you get the bananas. I said to the cashier, can I buy them for her? She goes, no, I already voided it out. I mean, what an idiot. And I told you know, down here at this time of the year, they could put pet rocks on the shelves of the supermarkets, tell them that it's on sale, they'd buy them. Don't know what to do with them. But they buy them. So anyway, that's my complaint about the snowbirds, but we are really having a hard time down here, Bob, with the overdevelopment, the congestion. It's like the old days in Jersey. You can't make a left-hand turn from 8 to 10 in the morning or, you know, 3:30 to 6 at night. This is paradise lost, and it's people like me who did it. We moved down here. It's all our fault. All right, I'm over with that. People are with us now, and can we go to the housing market first?
Anything you like.
Okay. All right. I didn't scare you off or anything, did I?
Hardly.
Okay. I'll try harder next time.
I'm really hardcore. I mean, nothing scares me.
Okay. Oh, all right. Now, I had said to you, as we do this monthly, that I was watching certain developments within this development, like you would call, I guess, the third phase, and it seemed like it stalled. And I did take a walk down this one newly developed street to see what was going on. And all they had in place, I thought they had a couple of concrete pads for foundations. They don't. They have in the plumbing, and that's all connected, and you got a couple of standpipes. That's all there is. Apparently, this thing has been postponed or tabled or whatever you want to call it. However, it gets better. And this is out of the Tampa Tribune, February 7th. It talks about a certain condo development in downtown Tampa. It says 16 of the 336 units are in some stage of foreclosure. 67 of the condos are for sale. An additional 41 units are listed in the database as leased or for rent. Of the 16 foreclosures, 5 are a result of owners not paying condo association fees. The rest are being foreclosed by financial institutions. And then we have a realtor that says, the apartment condo idea may have been good in its infancy, but developers oversaturated the market. And it goes on to say, of the 67 units on the market, 15 have been for sale less than a month. 10 have been on sale for 200 days or more. And it gets worse, actually, too. One last thing from the Tampa Tribune, and we literally, Bob, I mean, we sit in the middle of this chaos. Give you an example. four major roadways are supposed to be widened and extended and all this other stuff. And I'll just give you the first few lines about what has happened. It says with Curley Road, it said, Lennar Corporation hopes to renegotiate its deal with the county over widening and relocating the southern end of Curley Road. The developer wants to do the work as part of the developing Epperson Ranch instead of paying $20 million up front. State Road 56, a falling out between the owners of Zephyr Egg Company and Metro Development, has cast the plans into limbo. Sun Lake Boulevard, a dispute between brothers and Pete Garacci over their Long Lake Ranch project, has made it unclear when work will begin, and this will also delay segments of development on State Road 54. And then finally, Clinton Avenue, which eminent domain, has come in and really hurt some people in the area in which this road's going in. And here it is, a year-long delay in development of the Bella Verde complex has set plans back for building the western end of Clinton Avenue. What we have here in all these cases, Pasco County is being fully bedroomed. They have just cleared just miles and miles and miles of land for developments, and now everything has slowed to a stop. And you've got this scarred land, you've got garbage all over the place, from dump truck after dump truck. You know, and it's a mess. It's just an absolute mess. It's like living in Paramus, New Jersey, like back in 1963. So, but we said this because of the housing bubble. The bubble has burst. There's no saying it's going to anymore, is there?
Well, the bubble has definitely burst. The real estate market began to disassemble itself in June of 2005. So that was a year and a half ago, and it's paralleled. The inventories of new and existing homes have increased. It varies from place to place, but there's anywhere between, on average, 6.7 to 7.6% of months' inventory at nominal sales, and that's fairly large. I saw three economists this morning said that, well, they expect that to be worked up by the end of the year. I don't know what they were smoking before their meeting, but that isn't going to happen that easily, especially when you have now $1.5 trillion worth of adjustable rate mortgages coming due this year, and next year 1.3, so it's almost $3 trillion. One third of those people are going to lose their homes. I just wrote an article about it this morning that's going into tomorrow's International Forecaster. And what it is that, first of all, people are trying to get out of their adjustable rate mortgages, even though they're not up. They can't do it for a lot of reasons, and those that are up can't do it for a lot of reasons either. And that is that the value of homes, and in many instances, have gone down to a level which is at or below the amount of money they owe on homes. People who want to refinance are finding that the prepayment fees are essentially 6 months' payments. Then you have they're having people now sign affidavits stating that they're not lying about their income, and that no loan officer or real estate agent has made them do that or asked them to do that. And there's a number of other factors, one of which is higher interest rates, and they're relatively higher now than they have been over the past several months. And so this dream of clearing that we'll call up 7 month inventory is just that, a dream. Development in some places like Florida is like Jersey in the early 60s. When they converted the state from a garbage dump into a habitable place. I had to get that in. But the same thing happened in Los Angeles during the 60s and 70s. And as you know, in 69, the market topped out. And then again in 1980, it topped out. Actually, it topped out again, too, in 1974-5. And so there's been a lot of cycles and mini cycles. And the problem is that municipally, in cities and towns and counties and states even, they don't have a strong enough control on builders. And builders are not made to do what they should because they give campaign contributions.
Right.
And that should be stopped, just like lobbying should be stopped. And eminent domain is a problem, not only for roads, but just south of you in Port Charlotte, they eminent domained a big piece of property, and they were going to put an additional shopping center in there. And now it's all up in the air, and the county is in a position where it's costing them millions of dollars every day to carry this property, and it's just a horrible mess, which tells you that if you're going to eminent domain, you've got to bring the proper attorneys and the experts in on it, because people who run and are elected to run cities, counties, etc., don't have the background to effectively be able to execute such things.
Well, what is going to happen then? You want to make a projection based on, let's just say, this area. These developments seem to now have gone into a period of abeyance. No more new roads are going to be developed. Now, what's also happening is that there's a later ripple effect, and that affects the schools, because now the schools all of a sudden have to make adjustments because their populations have risen.
And you need more schools. Incidentally, what you're talking about, if you go down south from where you are to Cape Coral, that happened to Cape Coral from like 1980 to probably the year 2000. The home values, lot values fell, and all of that development was at a standstill, just like you're going through now.
But then now what happens? I know that they always play the old trick. If they need more money for the construction of schools, we have an influx that has slowed considerably of families coming into the area. But the ones that are already here and homesteaded now have their children in school. A lot of them are in portables as a Band-Aid. Where do they get the revenue to continue to upgrade and build new schools, especially if most of the property assessments are so maxed that they can't get any more property taxes out of it? You know, what's the answer? Have you seen any conclusion or...
No, I haven't seen an answer, but whatever you do, don't let them institute a state income tax. Because if that ever happened in Florida, the whole state would collapse.
Well,
it's one of the premier attractions is the absence of a state income tax. And that would be disastrous for the state. But I would assume they're going to continue to keep the real estate taxes at high levels. I guess the average home must be, what, let's say $250,000. I think that's a proper number. And that means your taxes are about $2,500 a year. And they're just going to have to keep them there or raise them.
Well, that's what I mean. They're going to... Well, let me give you a scenario that happened about 2 years ago. When they were getting ready for this boom, they came out with this campaign called A Penny for Pasco, where they were going to raise, and in fact, they did get it through. They were going to raise the sales tax by a penny. Now, in Florida, everything's taxable. Not unlike other places where, I guess, what you would call essentials isn't. There's taxes on everything. This is how they get around the state income tax. It's one of the ways. But anyway, we were wondering why they needed this penny for Pasco tax when they had enough money to do what they wanted to do. But then what happened was they started lobbying, two big ones, in fact. And when we took a look, and we went after this on the radio show, one of the few times I dedicated the show when it was on the AM stations, two local issues. And we tried to, you know, come back as strong as we could, saying, you know, they're playing fuzzy math with all this stuff. And then I found out who was contributing to this penny for Pasco. And I wrote an editorial that they did publish because I called them out on it. They said it was the passing of the tax, Bob, was a great, I guess, a referendum, excuse the pun, for grassroots giving and activism, excuse me. And when I looked at all the major donors, you were looking at nothing but construction companies, developers, given to the tune of the middle five-figure range. We're talking, you know, like 25 to 50 grand. And I said, what's so grassroots about this? And even the best one of the bunch, Bob, and people have to watch out for this in their areas, you get these radical environmentalists who want everybody off any kind of land, stuck in these islands of habitat, so the furry and the feathery things can go around free. But what was really rich about these watermelon environmentalists is that they took $5,000 from Newland developers based out of California. And you know what the scam is? They let the radical environmentalists get lands taken off the tax rolls, right? Considered preserved land. Then the developers come in and develop adjacent to the preserved land and use that as an aspect to bump up the prices of the houses because you live next to preserved land where out your window you can watch raccoons and deer frolic. Now, I love raccoons and deer, but the idea of using this whole idea of land acquisition, which is extremely, extremely communistic, and then also to use it to help the developers out. And that's what we were facing in this vote, which did pass probably about 3-1. And it's never enough.
It shows you how dumb people are.
Yep.
And how they don't read, and they don't care to read, and they're so lazy that they watch the news, and their children are just as bad. They don't spend any time with them. Oh, they say I can't because I work and he works, and so they don't get any extra education. You know, I talked to my daughter who lives just north of you, and she's a teacher, and each week they have at home a little program for the three children. This week it was Mexico, and it fit in with the Girl Scout badges. But anyway, the parents aren't doing that. They're not telling their children, well, Mexico's south of here, and this is what it's like there, and on and on and on. And then they do different countries and so on. Children aren't getting any of that at home. They figure, well, they go to school, and they learn what they have to learn, and I don't want to know about that. I want to come home, and I got to cook dinner, and I'm tired, and the husband's sitting in having a six-pack watching Monday Night Football or whatever. And that's what the American dream has become. Slothfulness. People aren't hustlers anymore. Hustling is in the sense that they want to get something accomplished. They want to become very successful in their lives, whether it be in their profession or financially. And, you know, the taste for competition has been lost, and the educational system is absolutely dreadful. In Florida, they're teaching to the FCAT, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other states are doing the same thing. The children are absolutely terrified because all they do is study, hoping they can pass the FCATs. And there are children who are in high school who have excellent grades who don't graduate because they don't pass FCAT. And the failure rate is very high in Florida. And so you have all of these things coming together, and it's not good.
No, it isn't. And as we said before, too, the regionalism of the county school boards is just crazy. I mean, you know, and we said this before, usually school boards were per each town, or if you were in a regional high school, you had maybe three towns together. But this whole thing, you know, one school board for all these towns, and you can't possibly maintenance them in an equal
They all have
manner.
Unique problems.
Huh?
Each one of them has unique situations.
Yes, exactly.
And you know, it's always good for people who are involved in that sort of professional action or semi-professional action, if you may, to live in the place where they're working for. I mean, to be part of the community. I mean, if you remember, in the Northeast, that was usually the case. But that's not happening anymore.
One of the other impacts of this housing bubble bursting is now that was one of the hottest sectors for employment. Now that's coming to an end. And I know they've always played games with employment figures. I mean, no matter what administration was in, it's always better, they say, than it looks. Right now, with regard to what you have in the International Forecaster. What is your take, or what is your information on the way the job markets are going?
Well, first of all, unemployment is over 13%. And the reason why is multifold. Number one, they don't count anybody who no any longer collects unemployment. Now, this goes back to 1990. And so, if you were 40 years old in 1990, you're 65. And you're not counted. You haven't been counted if you've been out of work that long. And a lot of people have. And another thing is they use what they call the birth-death ratio. The federal government decided that there are a lot of jobs created that they can't count in the private business community, so they have created phantom jobs. And so almost every statistic put out by the Bureau of Labor Statistics and the Commerce Department is nothing but a bald-faced lie. And the two worst are the employment figures and the CPI and PPI, which is the producer price index, the cost of goods at the producer level, the people who make things, raw materials and so on. And then the CPI, which is a consumer price index. And so all of these figures are untrue. Now what's happening now is, if you notice, I wrote a piece about a week or two ago, and it was about people who are illegal aliens leaving the United States over the past 6 months because jobs have not been available for them. And they've done well in America, and they've gone home to where they came from, mostly from Mexico. And they're working, making far less than they did before, but they brought a lot of money home with them. And some of them are building homes and so on and so forth. And you're going to see more of that. I've seen different figures on it, but I'll say that 40% of the jobs that were created over the last 5 years have been in real estate related industries. And I think that's going to change tremendously. And this has been going on a year and a half now. A lot of salesmen and women have left the industry. A lot of people have been laid off by mortgage lenders, appraisal companies, and then in the construction industry. And so there's a lot more unemployment out there than what they're admitting. And it's going to get one heck of a lot worse, because I believe that, and I base this on 1989-92, during that period nationwide, we had a 60% slowdown in the building of homes during that period. In fact, that period lasted until 94. The leverage and all of the things that are going on today that we didn't have then are in place today. And it makes it a different ball game. It makes it even worse. And so what does that mean? It means higher unemployment than before. It means a bigger downside to the housing market. It means that the construction of homes will drop probably more than 60%. They're only down, I've seen two sets of figures. One said 19%, the other said 13% over the last year. So we'll take the middle. Let's say it's 16%. And if we follow only the experience of 89-92, then we're looking at another 47% over the next 2.5 years. So to answer your question, it ain't good.
Also, at this time, 25 minutes after the hour, I want to let folks know that you're listening to Bob Chapman. And Bob, at this time, we haven't done any business, but will you tell folks about the publication and also the website?
Well, everybody out there can get a copy of the publication free. We have two issues to go out. The email version goes out on Wednesdays and Saturdays, and it's lengthy, each one, and it covers business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. And we have a hard copy that goes out twice a month as well for those who don't have computers. If you'd like a free introductory copy. You can call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And if you would like to visit our site on the Internet, that address is theinternationalforecaster.com. TheInternationalForecaster.com.
All right. Thank you. Getting back to this employment situation also, when you were on the last time, I think you stated that you thought that the minimum wage legislation was a slam dunk. Do you feel that way any longer?
Well, I've been proven wrong because in the Senate, they defeated the original bill, and then they passed their own bill and sent it back to the House. And so I believe we're waiting for that, aren't we?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And they're gonna...
And I think it's tragic that since 1997, that $5.50 minimum wage has not been increased. Florida is one of the worst states for that. And it should be $7.25, $7.50. And in big cities, such as Tampa, particularly Miami, New York, Los Angeles, it should be $9 or $10. And it's as simple as that.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, small businesses, well, I can't make it. Well, raise your prices. Everybody else does.
Yep.
They just don't want to pay anybody. I mean, you know, even at $10 an hour, I mean, who can live on that? I don't have to go into any great tirade about it. Everybody knows that you can't live on $10 an hour. And so there are people who, and a good example in Florida is waitresses. I think they were paying them $3.50 or $4 an hour.
Oh, yeah.
And they're living on their tips. Give me a break.
And
of course, we know how tight retirees are with giving tips.
I was just going to say that. Oh, they're pathetic. Oh.
Yeah, they think they're all going to bring their money to the grave with them. Well, it doesn't happen that way.
I know. Like we said, there's a foolishness about the way they do things. You know, I mean, they'll drive 20 miles out of their way to find gas 2 cents cheaper, not doing the math about maybe you just go to stay put, get the gas where you get it, it's close by. I mean, they think the looking for a bargain is always a bargain. So, I mean, it's like P.T. Barnum said, no one went broke underestimating the intelligence of Americans. Now, there's something else that there's a fallout here with the employment figures and such. One is that, yeah, they don't want the minimum rate wage to go up now because you have this surplus pool of workers, the illegal immigrants, and obviously if you get citizens to turn their nose up on a job, that's like $5 like landscapers get in this brutal heat down here. We can always get the illegals to do it. But something else has happened here, too. In the last 2 years, when my wife and I go inline skating at a track at a middle school, we have watched the local recruiter put his new recruits through PT before they go off to boot camp. They've already signed up. So this has gone on for 2 years, and I'm going to do a story on him and the recruiting just as a community interest story. But I asked him, I said, you know, you hear a lot of different and conflicting reports about all branches of the service meeting their quotas. I said, what's the real deal as you know it? The gentleman's name is Sergeant Larry Brown. And he said, we are always, always at least 10% over quota. And I relayed this to my friend up in Jersey, Pilot Pete, who said, yeah, he goes, you know, it must be a lot of minorities and stuff now. I said, Pete, in 2 years, I have not seen one black person. I have seen very few what looks like Latinos. And of them, most of them, believe it or not, are females. So I'm seeing nothing but basically white males and females going into the services. At least in this situation, it's the Army. And I say it's because there's no other real decent work opportunities out there. What do you think?
It's called offshoring and outsourcing. And they're moving America's manufacturing capabilities offshore. We produce now somewhere between 12% and 13% of what we use in our country, and now we're also shipping out jobs in radiology, accounting, and I had somebody call AOL in a complaint yesterday. And first they were hooked up with India, and they couldn't answer the problem, so they hooked them up with the Philippines. And, you know, where does it all end? Where do they expect Americans to get the money to continue to consume at 70% of GDP if they don't have any jobs?
Yep. And this has been going on. I remember back, and I guess a lot of strange things happened in 1973, 1974. It was around that time also that I first became aware of what had been American companies taking their means of production outside the country. I think at that time some of the biggies were Levi Strauss was one of them. I believe Converse Footwear was one of them. And I was talking to my boss while I was going to college, and he was 10 years older than I. And I said, this isn't making any sense to me. Why would we do this to ourselves? I understand that businessmen want to maximize their profits, but if you're going to send those jobs, which are usually high-paying, out elsewhere, then what are those workers going to do, and how much money can they make to buy the products, you know, that they once made coming back in, if you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're not going to pay them the wage to buy the products that you want to have at a certain price, this is crazy. This is like the Mad Hatter's Tea Party. And, of course, this went on and on. I mean, the 70s was only the beginning of it, and it didn't make any sense to me there. And then I realized corporations have no patriotism. You know, they've always been, at least in the mentality, transnational. So, you know, you see this one thing happening with outflow of jobs. You see, you know, a burgeoning workforce that's got no place to go, and I think the military is a beneficiary of that, and that's one of the reasons they don't have to go to a draft. But there's one other thing on the table. You know that they had that Universal National Service Act. They can honestly say it's not draft legislation. Okay? They can say it's not a draft legislation, and they'd be right, because if it's compulsory military service, it's something everybody has to do as a rite of passage, like almost, you know, like going through the public school system. So with that thing out there and revised now twice in 2 years, so I don't think they're doing it because they don't plan to use it. But if you have a situation where you've got decent people going into the military, why go to a draft? Would you agree?
Well, as of late, they've had to kind of search the bottom of the barrel intellectually to fill their quotas, which means they're letting in people who have arrest records, convictions, and also a history of alcohol and drug usage, and they're not too bright. And a lot of those people have gone into the military. They are also have been recruiting illegal aliens. And if you join, you know, when you get out, we make sure that you become a citizen. And the average, just to take as an example, the largest number of immigrants are from Mexico. The average education of the people who come to America is 6 grades. And the people who live on the farms, who are driven off the farms by the NAFTA rules, which flooded Mexico with cheap, subsidized food, these people have no education at all. And the chances of them getting it are small, because even if they pick up English, most of them don't read it. And so it's a real problem. And so these people can be easily attempted to join the military and get maybe even a career for themselves. And so it would be better if they could recruit, you know, high school graduates who had a good possible intellectual future in front of them. But that isn't easy to do today.
Well, I tell you what, if this cross-section that I'm seeing here is representative of what might be going on around the country, I would think that they are actually improving the gene pool in the military branches. And again, you know, and I want to go to this next thing, because this ties into something that happened, I think, well, 30 years ago. If you don't have a draft, a conscription of any kind, it keeps basically the kids in college sedated. One of the reasons I think they're not going to go to a draft, if they can help it, is because if they ever do, they're going to have a Vietnam scenario on their hands. Now, having said that, what looks very similar to me as to events that took place in early 1970, you've got this, again, Mad Hatter Tea Party logic. where you've got our president saying, okay, we're going to do a gradual pullout of the Middle East, but first we're going to send 20 to 28,000 troops in. Now, let me get this straight. We're going to subtract by addition. So first, what is this a signal for with regard to him sending more troops in, and maybe they'll start to pull out and things will be better in 90 days?
I just don't know.
Well, I liken it to what happened with Nixon, and I remember this very vividly. In April, when there was a draft, and we in college had, obviously, exemptions, 1Ss, he says in April they're going to do a gradual pullout. And then at the turn of April into May, they go into this full-fledged invasion of Cambodia, and because of that, we had one. The riots on campuses, and of course the infamous tragedy at Kent State. You have Nixon later on thinking that he made such a big blunder that he gets involved in that bungled burglary, trying to get a one-up on his opponents, and that also leads to his stepping down. But I'm seeing the same thing with this situation about, okay, we're going to pull out, but first we're going to send more troops in. Now, if there were a draft right now, they may know they would have another uprising on their hands. So wouldn't you say that without the draft, most college kids are not going to pay attention, and they can avoid what I would say is an internal uprising like it was in 1970 because of what has just happened here? Timmy, I think this is flagrant.
Well, I think you're right about that, and as long as they don't have to go, they don't care. The great passivity, the situation was different in the early 70s. It all depends on what's going on, too. You know, I think perhaps more college people, more high school graduates would be interested in the military if there wasn't conflict going on. But we're in one of the longest wars in history in the United States now, and it looks like our president wants to engage us in Iran as well. And it looks like Israel wants to use atomic warfare in order to disable the nuclear facilities that Iran has. And we could be looking at nuclear warfare. We could be looking at China and Russia joining in because they have big financial interests there. And there's lots of things that could happen. And if I was in college right now or graduating from high school, I certainly wouldn't join up.
Well, apparently a lot of these students, this is where I'm going, a lot of these high school grads may also be going because they do want to go to college. Now, and here's another thing. You see how extraordinarily expensive all college educations have become. Even if you're a commuter, you still got a heavy-duty bill by the time you're done 4 years later. So now, with the benefits to a military person, to able to get out from their hitch and then go to college because they couldn't have done it without a GI Bill. So, again, you have another impact, I think, making the military look attractive if, in fact, the kid is upward bound and but can't. The family and he both can't afford college. And you said something also about the famous Pell Grants that are out there now. Is that getting... Are they widening or expanding that program, or are they contracting that?
Which program is that?
I think you wrote on the Pell Grants for college educations. Do you remember that at all?
Telegrams?
No, Pell. P-E-L-L.
Oh, Pell Grants. Oh, yes. They have they cut the interest rate in half. Democrats did. And because they're in control now. And I had advocated that. I feel that the GI Bill was instrumental after the Second World War of making America the most competitive economy in the world. And it really gave us a tremendous upward edge into the 70s. And unfortunately, we've lost that edge. And there's a number of reasons why, but one of the main ones is that the cost of college is just insane. When I went to Northeastern in Boston, it was $1,000 a year. I think it's $25,000 now, or something in that vicinity. And Harvard and those other Ivy League schools are around $50,000. And a rule of thumb is for 4 years at 50 grand, you're looking at 200, and then you're looking at another 200 financial support, and so you're looking at 400,000 after tax. So that means you have to make about $900,000 as a parent to afford to send one child to Harvard. I mean, that's incredible.
Yep.
And, you know, the risk-reward is very, very small. And even in, I don't know what the University of Florida system charges. Do you know?
Oh, no, I don't off the top of my head. But I can tell you that when I took one graduate course online, it cost me $1,700.
Oh, my goodness.
So go figure.
I mean, those kind of when I went to school, those programs cost $25.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
and, you know, I went in the 50s, and of course everything's changed since then, but let's jack it up 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
And you get 250, not 1700. I think the educational system has abused the attendee financially. And I look at a lot of the universities, even state-run universities, that are wallowing in tremendous amounts of money that they have invested, which is another whole discussion. And I believe that they, just as a bottom line, I believe that they should cut back on the cost of tuition, particularly to poor children, and there's lots of them out there, as long as their grades are very good and they show great promise, I think they should be assisted. And America will be a lot better off for it.
You know, even, I mean, it's good to hear that they've lightened the load a little bit financially on the Pell Grant. I mean, I knew I took a national direct student loan, which was very, very attractive. But even if they do that to allow students to go to school, and that does pay the freight, eventually the bill comes due after graduation. And it almost seems to me that those young people will be saddled with debt from which they may never get out.
Well, it's usually into their 40s today. My children were lucky. I paid for everything, and that's unusual. I think it's going to probably get more expensive. One of the problems is that everybody has to go to college now. And at least 50% of the people who go to the first year of university do not belong there. They're not educationally and intellectually equipped to go to a higher university. And the problem is that they don't have anything to turn to because our schools don't have shop anymore, which would be woodworking, electronics, sheet metal, automotive. I don't know of any that haven't. Maybe some of them do, but that's where a lot of these kids can go because they enjoy, some of them enjoy doing that, and they have a great acumen for it. And there's no place for them to go anymore.
One last look, if we will, at what is going on in the Middle East. You stated in your newsletter, your publication, The International Forecaster, that another, that was an entire fleet that has left the United States bound for the Middle East? Or is it just the one carrier?
Well, this, the carrier is being joined by a cruiser and a destroyer, and there's a cruiser destroyer leaving Hawaii right now, and they're all supposed to be there by the first or second week in March, with the intention of having an invasion sometime late in March, early April. And they already have quite a few combat ships from both the Navy and the Coast Guard over there. The problem with that is that, yes, they can use them, and that's going to be very powerful, but the defensive missiles that Iran has are capable of taking out a carrier. And I think that we could lose the whole fleet over there. That possibility exists, and if they attack, and maybe nobody in Iran is going to survive the way they've got it set up, but they're going to get their missiles off, and I wouldn't want to live in Israel, I'll tell you that. And I think they've gone too far, and I think the damage is going to be awful.
Last month, I believe you were more optimistic, and I can understand if that was the case then, and I think I remember that accurately, that obviously it's not the same tune this time around. Let me ask you, on a scale from 1 to 10, what would the probability be that a conflict with Iran is imminent?
8.
Yeah.
And did you see the Senate committee hearing on either Mr. Kissinger or Mr. Brzezinski?
No.
Well, I cover the Brzezinski part quite thoroughly in this issue, and I alluded to it in the last issue. I didn't cover Kissinger because he's been working secretly in the White House for the last 3 years, guiding them. And goodness, wherever he's guiding him, it's not in the right direction. I mean, I think the guy's a disaster, not only as a prognosticator, and all he is a political fixer, among other very, very deviant and degradant things. But Brzezinski is a real intellectual. He is top of the line. And his commentary, which was not carried by any of the media, and it's the alternative media like myself that carried this, and I started talking about his ideas on the Middle East 7 months ago when he came out and said, we laid all these plans out for these people, and these people in the White House have just destroyed them. They've made a mess out of them. We've got to pull out of Iraq, and we cannot attack Iran, and here's why. Well, he went before the Senate, and he terrified them by telling them the truth. Now, Brzezinski is an evil genius. But that doesn't mean you should avoid listening to what he's got to say.
Oh, definitely.
Because if you don't understand your enemy, how can you defeat him? And what he had to say was very cogent, and that is, we can't do that. If we do, you don't want to be around to see what the fallout's going to be.
I got a call from a show host on an AM station below the bay down in Sarasota. He used to simulcast up here, and I used to work the board for him sometimes and sometimes be a guest. I always gave him the business off the air that although he was somewhat open-minded to the information I would talk to him about, that he would eventually go mainstream Democrat and just start doing the same garbage on his side of the street that that Beck and Limbaugh and the others do on the Republican side of the street. Mm-hmm. And he, oh, no. And I just keep giving him the business. So now what happens is this. He calls me up, and he very rarely does now that we don't have any professional connection, if you will. And he's like, did you see the story on Democracy Now that was put out by Cockburn, I guess on Counterpunch, about how the dancing Israelis?
Yes, I saw that.
All right, now. I went on one time, and it was right after the London bombing when Netanyahu had warning. I went on the air and said, he goes, do you think Israel had foreknowledge? I said, well, it looks like that, doesn't it? I mean, that's what it looks like. And I said, there's also a story about the dancing Israelis on 9/11 setting up at Liberty Park to photograph what was yet to come. And somebody called in as a caller and accused me of being anti-Semitic because of that. And I'm like, for what? Relating to documented news stories. So it goes on and on from there. Well, anyway, this guy Henry calls me up and he says, well, what do you think about that? I said, it's a distraction. It's a side street. I said, for you, you think it's big because this is building up anti-Iran and Arab rhetoric to get people prepared to go into another nation. I said, but Henry, it's the same old, you know, distraction or disinformation. That's to say that there were actually 19 Arab hijackers that day, and you know I don't believe it. So, I mean, taking that story now and twisting it that these guys might have been on the trail of the hijackers is, to me, ludicrous. And, I mean, you know, I never asked you to, but, I mean, are you of the mindset that there were 19 Arabs amongst four planes that day?
Never happened.
Okay. Thank you.
So, never happened. You know, incidentally, a speech was made by an educator in Wisconsin not too long ago saying that 9/11 was an inside job, and they have put him under psychiatric care for 45 days. He lost his job, lost his teaching credentials, lost his ability to have a concealed carry permit, and now they picked him up for a second time because he said the same thing again, and now they got him in a psychiatric facility. The first time around, they said he wasn't psychotic. He was paranoid. Big deal. The point is, the government is starting to pick people up who are discussing what you and I are on the air. And I'm on a dozen programs a week all over the world. And they've got to be very, very unhappy with me.
Yeah.
So, if you're in the United States, you stand a chance of having real trouble with the United States government. And if you say these things,
well,
and local authorities will act in concert with them on their orders and do anything they tell them to do.
Yeah, it's the thought police. I mean, the Ministry of Truth would be proud. What I did send to the show host, I said, you got to watch Brzezinski. I said, these guys talk out of both sides of their neck, or one of them plays good guy and one of them plays bad guy. But Brzezinski warned the United States back in the Grand Chessboard, written in 97, that we shouldn't instigate or aggravate the situation there so as to create a nexus, if you will, or an axis of evil with Iran, China, and Russia. Very interesting he would say that in 97. Now, Brzezinski apparently goes before them and says, you know, be careful. But now, here's another thing, Bob, and this is what I'm talking about with these characters. He was on a show with Wolf Blitzer and Al Haig. And Blitzer was saying, well, we have to watch out for Iran, you know, and his statement, his question was, but aren't they working on a bomb? Now, this is what Brzezinski says after saying, don't watch out what you do back in 97 and recently. Here's a statement to Blitzer. Yeah, but what I do take seriously is this. If our position in the Middle East keeps deteriorating, and it is deteriorating not only because of Iraq, but because also the stalemate of the Israeli-Palestinian peace process, because of the uncertainties involving in Iran, if the Islamic hostility towards us becomes overwhelmingly dominant in the region, we are going to be pushed out of that region. And here's the kicker. And I think there are signs that things are pointing that way. And if we are pushed out of that region, then Israel will be in mortal danger. Now, you know, I'm not going
to
put...
Stop right there. Wolf Blitzer fails to tell everybody that he used to work for the Israeli-American, whatever it is, called AIPAC. He was a professional employee of theirs. And that is not even-handed news, believe me. And that's terrible. And I noticed, and I'm no fan of David Duke, believe me.
Mm-hmm.
But when he was on there, he said, hey, Mr. Blitzer, why don't you tell everybody that you used to work for AIPAC? I mean, you're pro-Israeli, you're pro-Zionist.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, how can you even sit there and purport to be neutral on the matter as a professional person broadcasting news? And but to take Blitzer, he's a perfect example of what's going on. I really took real exception to the usage of cluster bombs in the last 72 hours in conflict, the invasion of Lebanon, and we've already seen 80 deaths and several hundred people with legs gone and so on and so forth. And I think it was a horrible thing that they did in dropping those weapons in there, knowing that they were going to be pulling out and all they would end up doing is killing women and children.
Right.
And the Christian Science Monitor did a piece on it today. I haven't reread it and done the research on it yet, but I just pulled it off out of the Times this morning. We get 35 papers from all over the world in five languages, incidentally. But this is the kind of thing that normal people don't do things like that.
Yeah, well, that's a very ugly secret being kept. It also makes it look like collateral damage is now a very acceptable outcome of any kind of conflagration. So you're going to see...
Well, the Nazis in the Soviet Union used to think the same way.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the way they've got this thing in Iran set up and what they've done in Iraq, they virtually, in Iraq, have wiped out half the population, and it looks like they want to completely exterminate by bombardment all of the people in Iran. It's terrible. Well, I mean, it's like a people culling process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the ways that's been very effective over time, and it makes a lot of money for people who make those means possible in armaments and in other industrial pursuits.
The money being made legally and illegally is mm-hmm. absolutely astronomical. I mean, these companies that are involved as over 100,000 contractors, 50,000 of them are mercenaries. People don't know that either, and they don't count them as a death count either. So that means we've got a 220,000 people in action already over there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think, well, and this is what I told the show host as well. I said, I told you before, and I'm going to tell you again, you're not getting out of there. The Democrats, and probably having a good shot at taking, you know, they're going to switch horses and bring Democrats in with artillery or whatever. And I said to him, I go, the war's going to expand when a Democratic administration's in for no other reason, but that's the way the game is played. You change horses every so often. I said, we're not coming out. I told you that 3 years ago. I'm telling you again. And I said, you know, I will remind you when, unfortunately, the hard rain falls in Iran, that this was going to be the way. I mean, this talk about not going in and all this other stuff is just more yin and yang. I think, unfortunately, all Americans, you know, realize we're going to go in. Some of them think it's the thing to do, probably most of them. But I take heed to what Brzezinski wrote, and I think he was giving us a prophecy that if we do that, we're going to be facing Russian and Chinese. And I don't even know how India fits in all this as well. I mean, it's going to be a very volatile situation, and I think we're going to take it right in the chops this time around.
Well, I think we're going to lose a lot of people, and it could turn into a third world war, and it's awful. You know, I've lived my life. I'm in my 70s. And if I die tomorrow, there'd be no great loss. I've done what I wanted to do. But there's a lot of young people out there that haven't lived their lives, and all the people to come behind them who aren't born yet. And this is what George Bush and these neocons, these elitists, these illuminists, that's what they are doing to the people of mankind.
We've been speaking with Bob Chapman. The website is theinternationalforecaster.com. His publication is The International Forecaster. He's very good about giving out sample free copies. He's been very helpful to a number of people who listen to the show and have gone to him for his professional advice. Please avail yourself of it if you can. Bob, again, thanks for coming on. Lord willing, we'll see, in another couple of weeks, come March.
Whatever you want, just let me know.
All right, I appreciate your time. We'll see you soon.
Okay, bye-bye.
One, bye-bye.
Two, three, four, one, two.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's one for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small, be thankful I don't take it all. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. If you drive a car,
I'll tax the street.
If you try to sit,
I'll tax your seat.
If you get too cold,
I'll tax the heat.
If you take a walk,
I'll tax your feet.
The tax man. Yeah.